Keith Arneson. I wanted to do this show for a long time. Keith Arneson, great banjo player, guitar player also, and just finished his career with the U.S. Navy band. I was a member of that band for, well, long enough to retire from the Navy. Keith Arneson replaced or filled the spot left when Bill Emerson left that band, to give you some idea of how powerful a band this is. And it is. It's a tremendous band. I've seen them live when Keith was playing with them and with Wayne Taylor. Keith has a new album out. It's called Namaste. And it's mostly original tunes, a lot of guitar work. We're going to talk to Keith in the second hour. I've been looking forward to this for a long time. When I first met Keith in Nashville years ago, he was with the Navy band then. And he had a Stelling banjo, and the first thing we both started talking about was Alan Munday's banjo playing, and we kind of bonded over that. Sounds funny, but it's true. It's a great story, and Keith has a great history leading up to his becoming a member of this band, his time with the Navy, and exactly what he did. And this is a two-parter because there's a lot involved in trying to sum up a life of such a prestigious musician, I think. You're going to like it. Keith's a wonderful guy. If you like pets and dogs, stick around, too, because we cover a lot. You're going to like this a lot, I promise. I'm really happy to welcome a friend to Unreal Bluegrass, also a wonderful musician, Keith Arneson. How are you, Keith?
I'm doing great.
Keith,
I'm doing well.
Keith, we met a long time ago at one of the IBMA, when Nashville was still new to the IBMA Adventure. And you were with the Navy band then, and I loved that show. It was a great band, and
that was fun. I think we had Frank Sullivan.
You did, yeah. That was a great band. Was Wayne Taylor still? Was Wayne with you?
Yes, Wayne was still in the band at that time.
So yeah. Listen,
that's been a few years ago. Wayne's been retired a few years more.
Yeah, I serve on the board with him now, and we talk about some of his old days also in between our meetings.
Wayne's a good guy.
He's a great guy.
He and I were in the band for 15 years, and we can almost like each other's minds now. when we play on stage. You know, I just got back from Nevada from a bluegrass festival at Bowers Mansion out there, and you know, being on stage with him was just, you know, it's just deja vu. You know, it's like the old days in the Navy. You know, I look over and there's Wayne again. You know, we're just not in for him. And we both have beers now, so
yeah. the impetus, I think, for us to finally connect, although I've been in contact with you forever on all sorts of social media, which is wonderful. And just,
I love social media.
Just for the listeners, every time Keith gets a new instrument, there's going to be several new tunes that come out of it, no matter what it is.
And probably several hundred.
Several hundred, yeah. So the impetus for us finally talking today, and I wanted to do this for a while, two things. Number one, you're out of the Navy. I want to talk about the Navy band connection.
Sure.
And you have a new album that will be available, if not already, that you just released, Namaste. And I want to let's get the people up to date with Keith Arneson and,
sure,
and the Navy band experience just a little bit. We were talking about that a little bit off the air, but I think it's a fascinating.
Uh-huh.
First of all, thanks for serving. I know you were actually assigned a special duty. You weren't just like band guys that ran. You had a duty assigned, because we talked about that before. But let people know a little bit about your experience with the Navy band.
Yeah, okay. Well, Bill Emerson was actually back in the early 1970s to join the Navy, because there was an admiral, and I don't recall his name right now, but in 1973, he saw the Country Gentleman performing a show with the Navy's concert band, and he wanted to have that kind of music made. Now, I don't know if that admiral wanted country music or bluegrass music, but at the time, he wanted to take all the Country Gentlemen and just, you know, and put them in the Navy. Well, Charlie Waller and Bill Yates were too old at the time, so Doyle Lawson and Bill Emerson were actually offered direct procurement into the Navy, not going to boot camp or anything. And Doyle said that he was going to, you know, he went right up to the end on his decision and decided to stay with his civilian band because he was experiencing some success at that time. And, of course, we all know what he's done since then.
Yeah, yeah.
And Bill said, you know what, I'm going. So he raised his right hand, and he came in actually as a chief petty officer, which is pretty amazing for any Navy types listening out there. That's a pretty high rank to come in at. And he didn't have to go to boot camp. But this was during the Vietnam era, and they had what they called direct procurement, where if they took somebody that was doing their job, whether it be a diver or a, you know, whatever their job might have been, they were just taken into the Navy with a uniform and, you know, raise your right hand and that's it, you know, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill kept a job for 20 years. He retired in 1993 as a Master Chief musician, and he did 20 years, and he said that's enough. And I found out through a student named Kent Taylor, who was retired Air Force. He came over one night for a lesson. I was living down in Calvert County, Maryland, which is about 65 miles south of D.C., and I was working for the Patuxent Naval Air Station down there as a civilian. And he said, Bill Emerson is retired, and they're holding auditions. I said, you're kidding. He said, no. So I said, well, it says banjo player wanted steel guitar experience required, because at the time they had a steel player who could also play banjo. Well, I know as much about brain surgery as I do about steel guitars. So, but he said, well, call him anyway. What do you have to lose? You already got a government job. I said, yeah. So I called him, and I said, well, at the time, it was send in a tape, and I was in a group called the Dixie Ramblers back then, with Mike Phipps, who is now with the Country Gentlemen Reunion Band.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah, I played with Mike for quite a few years, still do on occasion, and Mike sounds just like Charlie when he sings. He always amazes me. But anyway, I was playing with the Dixie Ramblers at the time, and we had just recorded an album at Fred Travers, who's the dobro player for the Southern Scene, he's got a little studio in Huntingtown, Maryland. And we had just recorded an album there, and it was actually getting pretty good reviews. And Fred was the engineer, and he actually played sound a little bit, too. And so I sent that tape in, and you had to send a photograph of yourself. And
so whose did you use? Whose did you use?
Yeah, exactly right.
James Garner.
Yeah, right. I wanted to use Earl Scruggs' picture. That's probably a good copy. But anyway, so I did all that, and I went into the I was called in for an audition. And I think there were five other people that were competing for the job. Some played banjo, some just played steel. It was kind of they kind of like didn't know what they wanted, because Country Current is also a country band.
Right.
And they have a bluegrass unit that comes out of that. So I came into the interview, and I started to notice when I was playing that I knew all the Navy ranks because I worked with Navy as a civilian. So there was the Command Master Chief came down, which is kind of a big deal. He's like the leading enlisted guy at the command. And then I noticed there was a lieutenant there who was an officer, and then a lieutenant commander who was the XO, the second in command. And then I noticed there was a captain there, and he was the officer in charge at that time of Navy Band, Captain Phillips. And I was thinking, they got some heavy hitters down here listening to me. Something's going on. And so, next thing I knew, I was doing push-ups in Great Lakes, Illinois for 11 weeks. And I was 30 years old at the time, and I had two kids, age 2 and 5, Kyle, my son, and Sarah, my daughter. She had just had her 5th birthday, I think, on July 22nd. I went to boot camp on the 26th of July. You never forget that date.
Mm-hmm.
And once I got home from boot camp, I was home for 12 days, and we went on a 34-day tour. And we left Maryland, went all the way down to Florida, all the way across to Alabama, back through Florida, and up the East Coast again. It was a 34-day tour. We had one day off.
Jeez.
So, I mean, I got a barrel. It's a different town every night, too. And it was, I really got a taste of what being a road musician was and how the Navy did it, too, which is a little bit different than the other bands, how they travel out there and stuff like that. But, yeah, and that ride lasted 24 years. It did this May 31st.
Yeah.
I retired as a senior chief. I didn't name Master Chief like Wayne did and like Bill did. I retired as a one-star instead of a two-star, so which is fine with me. You know, that was okay. It was when our sound man that came in, the newest sound man that we had, was born 2 years after I joined the Navy. I think it was time for me to go, you know, so. And, you know, our old bass player, Jeremy Middleton, who now plays with Frank Sullivan, he used to call me Grandpa. And I remember one time we had gotten somewhere to start a tour, and they had given us a brand new Toyota Camry, I think it was,
really nice car. Everybody got rental cars. We'd flown to, I forget where it was, Phoenix or something like that. And I had gone out to buy to find a Radio Shack to buy a battery for my tuner for my banjo. And as I had gone out, I turned the car into one of those pylons in front of a Walmart where they put the shopping cart, one of those concrete ones. I just caved in the whole right passenger side of the door. But nobody was hurt. You know, the mirror didn't fall off or anything. And so I came back, and Jeremy said, "Give me the keys, Grandpa. You ain't driving off this street." Woo-hoo! All right.
It worked.
So I had a show.
It worked. I don't have to drive anymore.
No, I said, as long as you take me to Burger King every morning, we'll be okay. But it was a good ride. I mean, I got a big story, as I can tell you. But that's initially how I got into the Navy. I was actually leader of the group for 8 years, and I stepped down. Pat White is now a senior chief, but he's leading that group. He came in about a year and a half after I did. So,
you know, Keith, so many. Go ahead.
Hmm?
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, now he's the old man.
So many great players have come through the Navy band. I mean, you mentioned a couple, Frank Sullivan and Wayne Taylor. There's been so many great. I mean, I'm telling you this. When I saw the band at one of the IBMA events, and it was maybe the second year in Nashville, it was early on in that. It was one of the best shows I saw down there, and you had a booth set up, and you were across the hall. You had a small concert venue, and it was you guys were great. I mean, you had everything down. You probably played a lot.
We played a lot, and that was our job for the military. The actual title of the job, if you're a musician, especially a Beltway musician like I was. Now, for people who don't know what the Beltway is, that's the big road that goes all the way around D.C. And they call us Beltway Sailors because we were stationed in Washington and we didn't bill anywhere. And that's the same for the Air Force. They have their band there too, and the Army has their band too. And the Marine Band, of course, is the President's own. John Philip Sousa was one of the first leaders of that. To be a Navy musician, your job is to, number one, support the President, whoever that may be. I played for four of them.
Mm.
Met them all. Played for the vice presidents, all the joint chiefs of staff, things like that. I mean, really, really highfalutin stuff. And so that's your number one duty to do that. So they're pretty picky about who they pick. You know, I think the band positions of when we picked Kaylee, we had, I don't know how many people sent in audition. I guess it would be MP3 now. Back when I was coming through as cassette tape. But I guess the final pick, Kaylee, who I think is a great pick, by the way. You know, it's interesting, I was a little aside. I was flying out to meet with Wayne to play in Nevada this past weekend, and my layover was in Chicago, and on Facebook I got a note from Haley, who was just leaving boot camp by bus, which is in Chicago, which is at the north side of Chicago, Great Lakes, Illinois. She was leaving Recruit Training Command to go to Chicago Airport to fly to Washington to take up her duties as the banjo player.
Oh, gosh.
But she sent me a note, "Are you still there? You know, I want to meet with you," or whatever. And by the time I got the note, I was already in Reno. So we missed each other by that much. But I thought that was kind of ironic, you know, how the tide shifts. And I told her, I said, "Well, you've got the job is 44 years old, and there's only two people that have had it, Bill Emerson and I."
Wow.
I said, "So I really want you to make me proud, and I want to be around when you retire. I don't know how that's going to work, but we'll see."
What a great heritage. You know, Keith, what a great heritage. I think the world of you, and I've seen you play, and I've heard you play on records. You're welcome. But to follow Bill Emerson, too, you know, there's not a classier guy or a more inventive banjo player than Bill.
I grew up listening to Bill, and Bill is from the D.C. area. And when I was about 14, Bill was in the Navy, and I had been playing about 2 years. And I wanted to go to a workshop given by Bill Emerson. And there was a guy hosting it. His name is Don Rusnak. He's still a friend of mine. And he was my first and only banjo teacher in Arlington, Virginia. He had a shop there called Vintage Banjo. I remember being a 14 years old, just skinny kid, you know, a bad acne and all that. And I came in with my banjo, and I sat down in front of Don, and I played what I my what I knew with my 2 years of experience. And Don looked at my dad, and he said, you know, he's not ready for Emerson. He said, but I teach. He's ready for me. And Dad said, okay. So I took 8 formal lessons on banjo. That's all I've had. But Don taught me about timing, how to back up behind a vocalist. He taught me a lot of things in those 8 weeks that have stayed with me ever since. And I've been a teacher since I was 18. And I always took what Don taught me into teaching my lessons, things like that. Whether people want to learn for fun or they want to play on stage or whatever they want to do, you know, that type of thing. And Don is still alive. He lives in Virginia, and he's a friend of mine on Facebook. So, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, you know, it is. It's great. It's a wonderful legacy. Before we went on, I said thanks for serving in the military, because you do serve in the military. Let me tell you
that's
this,
right,
too.
Right, you do.
Yeah, let me tell you this about Keith Arneson. When I saw you play, you are one of the rare banjo players that smiles and has a good time. And I say that knowing full well that, I mean, I immediately think of Alan Shelton. I think of,
right.
of Mike Scott, smiles and grins. And I think of you. And you know, people ask me, and I don't play like at your level. I've played out before. But they say, why don't you smile? I say, because this is really hard for me to do. But you always had a good time, and you always conveyed it and smiled, and just was always fun to see you playing banjo with the band. I don't know.
Well, you know, I've always been of the, you know, when I was a kid, I went to a show at Cole Fieldhouse at the University of Maryland. I had won tickets off a local radio station here called WAMU, and they used to have bluegrass every night of the week from 10 to 12 when I was in high school. And they had a contest, whoever answered the phone, like 7th or something like that, won 4 tickets to Bluegrass 77, they called it. And I remembered going there and watching the Seldom Scene, and I watched Jimmy Martin, and I watched Jim and Jesse, Lester Flatt, and the Nashville Grass.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
And a bunch of these big names. But anyway, I guess the point I'm trying to convey is that's the first time that I saw what live entertainment was and how to be a banjo player. Look like you're enjoying yourself, and the audience is going to have a good time.
Yeah.
If you're standing up there looking at your watch, looking like you have to go to the bathroom, well, you know, everybody's not going to be comfortable. But you know, I mean, at the same time, anytime I'm playing an instrument, I'm happy. And it's something that I actually enjoy doing. It's like I tell people, it's fun to get paid for something that you'd be home doing anyway for nothing, you know.
Keith, that's great. This is great. I'm glad to bring everybody up to date. You have this new album, Namaste, and I've got
Namaste.
Namaste. Yeah. So you know what? I always put the emphasis on the wrong syllable. I don't mean to.
Well,
that's
no problem. Wrong syllable.
Yeah. and I have there's 16 tunes on it. I was curious about. We talked a little bit off the air about the instrumentation and
right.
what you play.
Right.
And mm-hmm. first of all, gorgeous guitar work on a lot of these songs. And there's a lot of Keith on clawhammer style playing.
Yeah,
and you
yeah.
talked about that a little bit off the air, but what you had a thought about when you were putting these tunes together, many of which you wrote, but some of them are traditional.
Yeah, I wrote most of them. I think there were 3 tunes on there that were traditional tunes that I wanted to do. One of them was Danny Boy, and another one was Marching Through Georgia, which is, you know, an old Union Army song or whatever. But I always found it lent itself to double C tuning on the clawhammer banjo. And also the other one was Whiskey Before Breakfast.
Right.
But the other ones I wrote, and the reason I did that, there was a lot of prompting from my friends. I play a lot of guitar around the house. You know, I hardly ever play on stage. I did for the military in the country band, but usually it was at a second rhythm guitar or something like that. It was something that in my later years I always wanted to explore and have fun with. Now, I still love the banjo. It's my first instrument always, but somebody said to me on the, several people on Facebook that, you know, you really ought to put together a guitar album on these, you know, these videos that you make. Because a lot of times I make these videos just because I can go back to them as a reference and figure out, you know, what somebody's talking about, because, you know, what they say is, your memory goes in old age, not to mention memory loss, you know, so it helps me do that. But anyway, I get feedback from my friends and stuff saying, you know, hey, I like that song, and
know, whatever, maybe I'll try this, and which is really good. And so I decided, I called my friend Dave up, Dave Morse, who was the first sound engineer in the Navy, in Country Current when I joined in 93. And I went through, I think, five sound men, something like that. And they rotate them, their own division. But Dave has a studio down near Waldorf, down where I used to live. And it's called Planet Mort Studios. And I said, hey, Dave, man, I got these songs, and I want to do something with them. And he said, yeah, man, come on down to the house and record them. So I actually played bass, banjo, and guitar, and I also laid some really good songs. So it's basically songs about four tracks, something like that. And Dave is really easy to work with. He produced it, too. You know, he's the kind of guy that can turn around and say, you know, what you think about that last break? And I look at him and say, I know what you think, and I'll do it over again. You know, so... It's pretty soft touch.
Well, Keith, I was going to ask you, and if you're just tuning in, I'm talking to Keith Arneson. I was going to ask you, who else is on this besides you? Because I kept thinking that maybe you were playing several parts throughout.
No, it's just me. It's just
okay.
Lots of me.
That's what I thought.
With Pro Tools, you know, when I first joined the Navy, we had everything was on 2-inch tape. And we had a 16-track recorder. Okay. I'd never seen anything in my life in 1993. 16 tracks. Wow, that's unimaginable, right? Because the first album I did was on vinyl, and it was on 1-inch tape with Peter Bonta down at his studio, Wally Cleaver's recording studio down in Fredericksburg, Virginia. And that was back in the early 80s. And I think he had 8 tracks. And to go see 16 tracks, now you have hundreds of tracks. Everything's digital, you know.
Yeah.
So there's lots of me's on this record. And since I worked cheap, I decided just to play it all myself. So... like I say, they were all songs I wrote, and Danny Boy has always been a really pretty song for me. And there was a lady I knew who was a friend of the family for many years, I've been in the Navy, I guess, about 5 or 6 years, and she always said to me, she had gotten really ill, and she said, Keith, when I die, I want you to play at my funeral, and I'd like you to play Danny Boy. So I worked up an arrangement for it on banjo, and when I got to the church where they were having the service for her before they took her to the cemetery, the preacher at that church at that time came up to me and said, you can't play Danny Boy. It's it's not a religious song. And I said, what do you mean? I said, well, that was her, you know, one of her dying requests.
Yeah.
He said, well, you can't play it because it's not a religious tune.
It is, okay, if you're Irish, Keith.
No, I'm Norwegian, but, you know, I love Irish music. But,
oh, yeah.
So what I did, I told him, I said, okay, I'll play Amazing Grace. And he said, okay, that's fine. So I played Amazing Grace, and then I went into Danny Boy. And the preacher kind of gave me a look, and I walked over to him. I said, it's okay, I don't go to church here.
you can't kick me out.
And I walked out. Yeah. God bless you, Mrs. Twine. Yeah, that was something. But that was, it's always been a fun song for me to play. And first of all, before we go any further,
yeah, sure.
I got to give a shout out to my dad, Bo Arneson. He played banjo for 10 years when I was a kid. He learned 3 songs, and he played them over and over and over. And he's the one that gave me my first banjo. And my first banjo was from Western Auto.
Yeah, I remember those stars.
Yeah, remember Western Auto?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Anyway, he bought a banjo in 1962, and it was $40 back then. So he put $10 down on it, and he charged $30. And my mother, I think, was pregnant with me at the time. And Dad was an apprentice printer at the time. He wasn't making a lot of money. And Mom wasn't too happy about that. But I got that banjo, and I had that. And Dad said, if I played that for 2 years, he'd buy me a good banjo. And so I said, okay. And there were 4 of us kids, so there wasn't a lot of money. So I worked as hard as I could. He used to place bets with me. Like, he would, on the weekends, he used to remodel houses and build furniture and stuff like that. And he would make a bet with me that I couldn't play Floppier Mule by the time he got home. Because I grew up on Kingston Trio and all the, you know, Pete Seeger and all the folk stuff.
Yeah.
And so I took it. It was for $5, which was a lot of money in those days. For about 9 hours, I worked on Floppier Mule. And I still teach that to my students. It's kind of a cool song.
Yeah, it is.
And it was the version was a clawhammer version. I don't recall who it was by. It was a Highwayman or a Journeyman or something like that. And but I figured it out on in freestanding because I didn't play Clawhammer at that time. I played it, I guess, good enough to get the $5. You know, because I charged $5 to cut a lawn, so that was a lot of bread. So, you know, that was pretty cool. But anyway, he's the one that got me started on the road and bought me several things.
I'm glad you remember that. The people that know you, Keith, whether personally or just through social media, will be happy to learn that on this album there are two songs for Rocky.
Yeah. Rocky and the Rabbit and Rocky the Wonder Dog. Yeah, he's... You know, I'm an animal person. I'm an animal. I'm not really an activist or anything like that, but all my animals are adopted.
Yeah.
I believe in that. You know, if I can get an animal to adopt, it's not going to have a home otherwise, and that's what I'll do. And so Rocky has been a good friend of mine. I got him from a student of mine about 10 or 11 years ago. Claire was her first name, and Claire told me that she had a dog for me. She fostered dog. I said, I don't want a dog. And my wife was making dinner in the kitchen, and she said, how big is it? And I said, bring it over Tuesday night. So they did. He's been with us ever since. And he's about 13 or 14 now. He's going deaf, so I think he's probably a bigger fan now that he's deaf.
He's very
lay right next to my aunt, you know.
He's very photogenic.
Yeah, he really is. Yeah, he's very good if I put sunglasses on or do something silly with him. That's how you can tell I have too much time on my hands.